Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest is journalist and historian Kevin Baker, and he's got an article in the New Republic called Blue Exit, a modest proposal for separating blue states from red. It starts like a breakup letter. Dear red state Trump voter, let's face it, guys, we're done. Kevin has written how a nation of dreamers, America the Ingenious, how a nation of dreamers, immigrants, and tinkerers changed the world, one of his past books. But now we're going to talk about his Blue Exit breakup letter. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
The subhead is a modest proposal for separating blue states from red. Are you really proposing something?
Yeah, I'm proposing virtual secession. And there's a lot of sarcasm and snark in the article. But in the end, it's a serious proposal.
You want to organize – well, here's – I'll read a little bit of the snark so people get an idea of the tone. Let's see. You say you want to organize the nation around your cherished principle of states' rights, the idea that pretty much everything except the U.S. military and paper currency and the national anthem should be decided at the local level. Fine. We won't formally secede in the Civil War sense of the word. We'll still be a part of the United States, at least on paper, but we'll turn our backs on the federal government in every way we can, just like you've been urging everyone to do for years, and devote our hard-earned resources to building up our own cities and states.
Hear, hear.
New York nationalism.
Yes, exactly.
And there's, you know, there's a real policy irony here, which we've talked about before on the show, which is that states like Mississippi and some other of the reddest states of the nation get the most net plus from federal tax dollars, and states like New York get the most net minus because we have more rich people, to put it bluntly, and so we pay more into the federal government than we get back, and Mississippi puts less into the federal government than they get back, and yet we're pro-federal government and they're anti.
Right, and that's been the case for a long time. And I think it's a good idea in general. It's how it binds the country together. I'm all for the richest places helping out the poorest people, the most oppressed people in other parts of the country. But clearly now that's not going to happen, not with this administration rushing to reduce Medicaid to block grants and capping it. Probably rushing to destroy Medicare, maybe Social Security after that. Our money is no longer going to go to the people who need it most in red states. It's going to go simply to the national project that the Trump administration is about to inflict upon us all.
So, listeners, anybody on the Blue Exit bandwagon? I know some people are really talking about secession, I think more in California than anywhere else. Right. Or anything you want to say or ask of Kevin Baker, who is now the author of Blue Exit, A Modest Proposal for Separating Blue States from Red in the New Republic, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Is this something that is just a vehicle for snark and for pointing out inconsistencies and everything? Or is it really something that the blue states that do fund the federal government more than they get out of it can actually do or should actually do?
I hope it's a real strategy, and I think it's the only strategy left to us. You know, I'd love to convince all the red states to come over and see things our way. But in order to have an argument with somebody, in order to convince them of something, you have to operate out of the same reality. And we simply don't anymore. You know, red staters now, poll after poll, Republicans and the far right would much rather accept news from, say, some fake news site originating out of Macedonia or Moscow than anything that the real media in, you know, in this country has to say.
Do you think there is a serious secession movement? I saw you nodding when I said that I gather people in California in progressive circles talk about this even more seriously.
Yes, there's a lot of talk of a Cal exit. And California is an enormous economy on its own. You combine that with Oregon and Washington State, that could easily be a nation in most parts of the world. Same thing here. Do you take New England, New York, on down through Virginia? That would be a nation that would do very well if it were suddenly independent.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Kevin Baker. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Just a quick question, and that is, what is actionable at the level? I'm furious, as a lot of people are, but I always wonder, what can I do to support your movement? I completely agree with it.
Thanks. I think, first of all, try to sell our national representatives on the idea to doing things like, you know, basically reducing the federal income tax to next to nothing and putting that tax money back here instead. The other thing is building.
I think you call that in the article the full Wesley snipe.
Yes, full
which
Wesley
refers
snipe.
To
pay nothing as he did. You know, at the same time, build blue America at home. You know, for instance, in the New York State legislature, where we keep electing Democrats to run the state Senate and they keep defecting to the Republicans because they're corrupt and want special favors for themselves. Call them on that. Build a better society right here at home.
A temporary travel ban from Alabama and Mississippi for extreme vetting.
Now, what we do is we want to recruit all kinds of people from the red states, actually. Their best and their brightest. Anybody who can help us. We want them to come here.
Linda in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I'm very concerned about the title of your guest's article. My concern is that we will have a secession, but I'm not concerned that the blue states are going to secede. I'm afraid that the red states are going to secede. We have so many holier-than-thou intellectuals who are appalled at the popular vote, and I am also appalled at the popular vote. Believe me, I do not agree with, I am not happy with the results of our most recent election and his principles.
Vote.
But my concern is that we just have to recognize the fact that the red people in the red states do have some legitimate concerns, and we need our red states. They provide our food. They provide most of our fuel. And more people were killed in the Civil War than any other war we've participated in. So instead of finding more reasons to separate ourselves, I think it's time to focus on how we can unite.
Well, I'm not appalled at the popular vote. We won the popular vote by about 3 million votes and lost everything.
But you probably want to eliminate the Electoral College. There's a big movement to do that, and I do not think that that is a good idea for the reason that because I am concerned that it will start a secession movement, but it will not be the blue states seceding. It'll be the red states seceding. And I think we still need them. Even though I'm a popular vote person.
Since you're taking this so serious, Linda, why not, if the red states wanted to secede, as a thought experiment here, say, go. You want to take your values? You want to take your racist, misogynist, blah, 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 if you want to denigrate them that way? A small government, limited government, no good Medicaid, blah, blah, blah. And have that country? Go have that country. Why not say that?
I think we need each other. I don't think that will work. I like that.
We can
part
always
of the country
have
too.
We can always have trade agreements.
I think as Horace Greeley wrote in 1861, erring sisters go in peace, and that's what I would say to the red states right now.
If it could be done peacefully, maybe, but I'd still like us to stay together.
Well, I'm not even for a formal separation. I'm simply talking about what they have been proposing for years, which is an ardent federalism. Where we would do our thing and they would do theirs and we'd still have an official union. I'm not at all for a war. I'm not at all for breaking up into real separate countries. I'm just saying we need to devote our resources to where we can build some alternative to their what I feel is frankly horrible vision of the future.
You're right. And Linda, thank you for your call in the article. And once the president delivers on his campaign promise to Jerry Falwell Jr. and other evangelical leaders by making it legal for churches and other nonprofit organizations to funnel tax-deductible donations directly to political candidates, we can expect a fresh Niagara of cash to pour into our elections, one that will make Citizens United look like a dry creek during climate change. Explain this in more detail. The president talked about this again recently at the National Prayer Breakfast, undoing what's known as the Johnson Amendment.
Amendment, right. And I was one of those people a little baffled as to how it was that the most irreverent presidential candidate in our history, a man who openly mocked the communion on national television, was the favorite of the evangelical right.
Wait, what did he do about communion?
He talked about, I go in, I take the little cracker, I drink the little wine, which is the only wine I do drink nowadays. But I've never asked God for forgiveness. I don't feel I have to. You know, if this had been Hillary Clinton saying this, they'd still be marching in the street with pitchforks. This is the most openly irreverent candidate that a major party has ever nominated. Why is that? Well, because he promised to show them the money. He promised people like Jerry Falwell Jr. that he would get rid of the Johnson Amendment, which it was this statute put in the 1950s by Lyndon Johnson when he was still in the Senate, saying that you cannot directly endorse somebody from the pulpit or come out against somebody from the pulpit in a church and maintain your tax-exempt status. He's promising to get rid of that, which means these churches and religious organizations like Falwell's Liberty University are going to be overflowing with money to do with as they please.
And are you opposed to that? One could argue that churches, any religious organizations, shouldn't be singled out among all the other – of course it applies – you know, I'm saying this, but it applies to any nonprofit organization. They cannot take a political stand per se. The churches say, well, we are sort of singled out for non-participation in the political process.
Right. What this amounts to, though, in practice, is another huge tax cut for people like the Koch brothers. And for me, I think that will really tip the balance even more in favor of the right, which already has all this money. And I don't see how we come back from that.
Bob in Highlands. You're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I'm probably the opposite of the last caller, having the fear about the red states. I'm old enough to remember 20, 30 years ago that this idea has been written about before. In reality, that others have predicted that this would actually happen, really due to the geographical and other influences, not as much political at that time anyway, just the fact that the West does more business with Asia and the East does more business with Europe and so on. And my fear is that the polarization of the country has gone so far now that trying to pull it back and reunite is a generation or two away at best, and that the realization of what you're talking about could have some validity, notwithstanding the fact that I think it would be awful for the red states in the scenario, because just taking the value side of it, but just how much if you take the educational aspects and the economies alone that the Northeast and controls, and California alone has something like the sixth largest economy in the world or something like that. So it's I'm wondering why you stop short and keep it virtual, that you don't see some advantage that might actually come about, notwithstanding the militarization issue. But so I don't have the answer to that. But I'm not so sure it wouldn't be a bad idea for real.
Well, I think there would be a huge opposition to that. I don't think that would be possible. And I don't even know if they'll let us really do a virtual secession. They probably won't, because they depend on our tax money very much. So that will be hard enough to do that, to get back to some real federalism. But, you know, I've talked to people. Most of the criticism I've gotten on this article has come from the left and from liberals. I talked to a right-wing podcast host the other day. He was all for this. This is something that we can appeal to them on something they purport to believe in, which is federalism. So you might be able to do this.
Wayne in Cranford says he has some actual experience in this realm.
Yes.
Is that right, Wayne?
How are you?
Good.
It's a great topic. I actually participated in the secessionist movement in Texas, which is I went to the website looking at virtual, and I signed up, and I was very welcomed. This was when Obama was first elected. There was an effort for Texas. I don't know. You can go back to Mexico. Good luck with that. So, I mean, it's been out there. You got to look at people like Eric Holder representing California in fighting for federalism, and that's going to be very interesting. But, you know, the idea of regional compacts, especially for infrastructure and environmental stuff, is not new. And I think that's an institutional basis.
Yeah.
And we've also had in the past, not lately, regional caucuses among, especially in the Senate,
right,
where the representatives, whether they're Republican or Democrat, have actually gotten together to defend regional or sectional interests.
Right.
And I want to remind Mr. Baker that when Sandy hit New York and New Jersey, there were a lot of red states who held up funding.
Yes.
So they've done it for us.
Yes.
So why, look, block grants can work. I've seen them work. Nixon introduced them. They worked. And if you can block grant infrastructure, you can get mass transit along the East and West Coast. That's, you got to do it as regional compacts and block grants.
As long
because
as
you guys aren't going to give it to you. I'll stop now.
Thank you. As long as they allocate enough money in a block grant.
Yes. But. Yeah. And you're quite right about the reluctance to give us anything for Hurricane Sandy, even when we were attacked by their favorite people, radical Islamic extremists, radical Islamic terrorists, they were very reluctant to give us money to recover from that. So they constantly talk about how FEMA is some kind of welfare stunt put together by Clinton and how suspicious it is. And then when something hits their states, they, you know, it's give me the money.
Let's take one more call who's going to put a very local cast on this discussion, which might even make it more bracingly real. Bruce in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, yeah, Bruce.
Hi. My question is very simple. I wonder if you subtract New York City from New York State, whether New York State would be, in fact be a red state.
Right. Well, I know the counties pretty well and how they voted. And it's New York and most of the immediate inner suburbs. So four boroughs of New York voted for Clinton. Staten Island voted for Trump. Nassau and Suffolk voted for Clinton. Westchester and Rockland voted for Clinton. Pretty much once you go upstate from there, except for the urban cores of Albany and Rochester and Syracuse, I think, you know, most of the 63 or so counties in New York State did vote for Donald Trump. So there is a United States of Clinton and New York State of Clinton and New York State of Trump.
Sure. Up there in the Big Empty, it is a pretty red state, even though the sole engine pretty much left in – economic engine left in the state is New York City. People upstate refuse to accept that. They feel that they're paying for us. I'm for filling up those spaces with as many talented immigrants, as many red state refugees as we can find.
Of course, New York still went overwhelmingly for Clinton because those counties that I mentioned have almost all the people.
Right, right. And I'll tell you this too. New York City always pays out much more than it takes in federal money, even during the bankruptcy crisis, the New York bankruptcy crisis in 1975, New York City was paying out more in federal and state tax dollars than it was taking in.
Because there is, talk from time to time of New York City secession,
yes.
Right? Or the downstate, like California has the same upstate, downstate secession talk from time to time because –
right.
You know, people in San Francisco saw themselves as being so culturally different from people in L.A.,
yes.
And people down here. Sometimes they say, well, okay, you know, New York City or downstate New York, why don't we just make our – you know, they don't like what we do. They want to tell us what our rent laws have to be, all of that. We'll just secede.
It was another Civil War idea. If the South was going to secede, a very corrupt New York mayor named Fernando Wood wanted to set off New York City and Long Island and call it Tri-Insula. You know, maybe its time has come.
Tri-Insula.
the Republic of Tri-Insula.
Like a peninsula
yeah,
for
so
Long Island?
Three insulas. The Bronx, Manhattan, Long Island.
Last thing.
Yep.
Your proposed blue state virtual secession seems to be about the failures of the Democratic Party as much as it's about, you know, the ignorance that you see in red state voters. You're right. It's Clintonism as a political philosophy, as practiced not only by both Clintons but also by President Obama,
yeah,
that put the final stake in the heart of the Democratic Party as a national entity. Why do you think that?
I think Clintonism offered a very smart critique of how the world is changing, of how automation and globalization are wiping out certain types of jobs and changing the whole way we work and live. Unfortunately, they didn't offer much of a solution. You know, it's sort of like that ad now for that internet security company, which says, why monitor a problem if you're not going to do anything about it? And they show a bank robbery, and the bank guard says, oh, I'm not here to, you know, to do anything about this. I'm just sent here to say if there is a bank robbery, there's a bank robbery. And that, to me, was the essence of Clintonism. Your world is changing. Get another degree and become a white-collar worker. And that says nothing to the 70% of this country that doesn't have a college degree. And that's where I think the Democrats ultimately went wrong.
Historian Kevin Baker, he used to be – historian and journalist Kevin Baker, he used to be best known maybe for his book, America the Ingenious, How a Nation of Dreamers, Immigrants, and Tinkerers Changed the World. He may now have to divide that book into the blue state and the red state version with his new article in The New Republic, Blue Exit, A Modest Proposal for Separating Blue States from Red. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.